From the nation's capital, you are listening to News in Depth with Jared Pliner on GW Radio, gwradio.com.
He is legal counsel to the Gertrude Stein Democratic Club. It is a powerhouse when it comes to gay rights advocacy here in Washington, D.C. He also hosts his own radio show called The Inside Scoop, everything the government does not want you to know about what's going on here in Washington, D.C. Hi, Mark. Good afternoon. Great to hear from you.
Hello. Thanks for having me on the show again.
Yeah, nice to hear from you. We promised we'd bring you on again the next time something consequential happened. I want to get into the questions. First, obviously, the District of Columbia decided to recognize out-of-state gay unions. That was last year. Now, as of Wednesday, gay couples are free for the very first time to apply for marriage licenses. What does this victory mean for you and for the broader gay rights movement?
Well, I think we are at the end of a long battle, at least in the District of Columbia. I shouldn't say quite the end. I should note there is one more legal battle left to be fought. The two referendums are dead. One of the two initiatives are dead. One of the initiatives, and this, of course, is an initiative by Pastor Harry Jackson of Beltsville, Maryland, who is very much trying to get the people on D.C. to vote on whether or not gay people deserve human rights or not. Our argument all along was that you don't vote on human rights, you don't vote on civil rights. Those are basic things.
And not only that, Mark, but the D.C. Human Rights Act of 1977 supposedly, as the courts have agreed, precludes it from going to a vote.
That's exactly right. And in fact, that 30-year-old law was the heart of what the battle was about. They contend that the law was improperly enacted 30 years ago, and even though nobody mentioned it 30 years ago, they were basing it on that to say that not just that gay people shouldn't have civil rights in the district, but really no one should have civil rights in the district. Everyone's civil rights should be able to be put up for a vote. And what's interesting to me is that one of the civil rights protected by the Human Rights Act is political affiliation. So we could say to Cleta Mitchell, no Republicans can work in the district. And because she doesn't believe the Human Rights Act is valid, we could vote on that. And given the heavily Democratic policy in the District of Columbia, I think that's a vote we might well win. So if they ever were to succeed in overturning the Human Rights Act, we might as well just broaden discrimination and include a lot of other people.
Mark, I'm sorry. I just wanted to ask a quick question about recently this group that you're speaking of, they filed a petition, I believe, with the Supreme Court, actually. It was an injunction, I should say.
United States Supreme Court, exactly.
And Chief Justice Roberts dealt with the case by himself, did not bring it before the full court, and he struck down the injunction. However, based on the fact that the legal battle was still being processed and that Congress had failed to act on it yet, in his opinion, his three-page opinion, he did say that he felt like the petitioners had a point when it came to this referendum. Could you perhaps explain what Justice Roberts was speaking of and your opinion on it?
Proceedings are quite complex. Basically, the opponents of marriage equality brought four separate actions to try to bring this to a vote, two initiatives and two referenda. And referendums in D.C. die the moment that the congressional review period is over. Now, the congressional review period is something that occurs only in D.C. in no state. Congress has a right to review D.C.'s laws and to vote against them and to nullify them if they so choose, because the district isn't, of course, independent like a state is. That's a 60-day period. It's confusing. You calculate it based on how many days Congress is in session. In any case, once the Congress review period is over, referendums become law. You can't stop them. So what the opponents of marriage equality were trying to do was trying to get an emergency stay, trying to get an injunction prohibiting this law from going into effect so that they could have time to challenge it. Now, that's never been done before in the entire history of the District of Columbia home rule. And it's quite an extraordinary thing. And when the D.C. courts, both the lower court and the Court of Appeals, turned them down, they went to the U.S. Supreme Court. The only thing that Chief Justice Roberts ruled on was whether or not he could stay the effective date of this law allowing gay people to marry in D.C. Again, there was no basis in law for that, so even though he may have sympathy for their political goals, he knew that he couldn't do that, and he certainly couldn't get five justices of the Supreme Court to back him up. So he turned that down, and we are going to have gay couples getting married, as you point out, starting next week. They have Wednesday and this thing period. There is still, however, this initiative still left, and I plan to be personally fighting that on behalf of the Gertrude Democratic Club, the oldest and largest gay lesbian club in the district. I will be there fighting because there is this initiative left. And who knows, we may appeal that to the United States Supreme Court. The initiative would then seek to forcibly divorce or otherwise take away the civil rights of gay couples. that already will be married and are married in the district by the time of that decision. And so that's one last fight we have to fight. I'm confident we'll win that too. But so the battle is 98% done, but we're not quite done yet.
Mark, just a quick question. Did it surprise you that Congress declined to intervene during that review period? Because
not in the least.
Oh, it did not. Okay.
Not in the least. Listen, district advocates have long understood that when there's a Republican Congress, when there's a Republican president in power, trying to advocate for equality, a lot of Republicans are bigots. A lot of Republicans dislike gay people for religious reasons or whatever. And we knew that we were in trouble because also Republicans don't respect the right of the district government to have the district rule itself. They don't respect D.C.'s independence. They don't respect democracy in D.C. A Democratic Congress is entirely different. And there's a reason why the D.C. Council waited. And it wasn't because they didn't support marriage equality. They've supported marriage equality for more than a decade now. The reason why they waited is because they knew with a Democratic Congress and a Democratic president, it was highly unlikely that Congress would overrule the district's decision. They waited smartly to the right time. And frankly, no one expected Congress to intervene.
And I must also bring something else up, and it's admittedly something I wasn't able to understand completely. I believe in the Washington Post's main article on the passage of gay marriage, there was the front page article and everything, they did mention that there was a possibility that Congress could perhaps intervene in the future in this regulation through the appropriations process.
That's true.
Could you perhaps expand on that a little bit? Because I didn't feel like it was adequately explained.
Absolutely. And this is something that Congress has done before. Again, it's done under Republican rule. For example, when the people of D.C. voted to allow medical marijuana, and that is not a freedom that the Republicans want the people of D.C. to have or to vote on, what they did is they said they denied the district government the monies necessary to even count the ballots in that referendum or to implement that referendum and that initiative, I should say. And so they used their appropriations power to shut down things they didn't like that the people of the District of Columbia were doing. Now, a number of people, Republicans and Democrats, say whatever the District of Columbia does, you know, we believe in home rule, we believe in freedom. You know, Republicans used to call it states' rights, even though D.C. is not a state. Let the people of D.C. do what they want to do. But the Republicans often use the appropriations process in order to shut down D.C. They still could do this. Now, I'm firmly convinced that the Democratic Congress won't do this, but if, for example, the Republicans were to take back the House and the Senate, I think they very well could do this and try to wrap it up in some massive must-pass bill, you know, involving appropriations of, say, 12 federal departments, making it difficult for President Obama to veto. That is still a concern.
Wait, Mark, but, yeah. But doesn't this contradict the long-held Republican conservative principle of federalism in that you don't interfere in these types of issues because they fall under the realm of the states? I mean, it seems a little bit of a...
It certainly would if you believe that Republicans believe in consistency. If Republicans really believe in federalism, they, of course, wouldn't be interrupting what D.C. is doing. But as the Bush v. Gore decision showed, where Florida simply wanted to count its votes, and the five justices of the Supreme Court said, no, Florida, you have no right under your own state law to count your own votes, which, of course, has no basis in law anywhere, Republicans are more than willing to throw their principles out the window if they have other concerns that are greater. I would love to see a consistent Republican who believes in federalism actually stand up for it. What I find is they throw states' rights way out the window whenever it is that they don't like them. The clearest example right now is in the health care debate.
Right.
Republicans are insisting that state regulations have no meaning. Every single Republican is doing that,
sure.
Which shows you the Republicans say they care about states' rights. They say they care about federalism. I don't know a single one of them that's consistent on that point. I wish they would be.
And DOMA. Am I correct on that?
That's another example where they use the federal government. There's no constitutional right or any federal right of Congress to rule on marriage at all. That's always been something done by the individual states. And that's another example, exactly, of Republicans' rhetoric not matching their reality.
Mark, one of the arguments, on the last time we had you on, you preceded Cleta Mitchell, who,
yes.
Via her own terms, declined to go head-to-head against you, but wanted
yes.
the back-to-back, and you called her out on that, I recall very vividly.
Right, she wanted to rebut me. She wanted me to go first. So
and then,
she got
sure.
all the advantages there.
Yeah, you fell on the grenade. but one of the arguments that she was making, which seemed fairly compelling, was that pursuant to the D.C. Home Rule Charter, that the residents of the District of Columbia have a right to vote on every single issue or so she argues, outside of appropriations. Why was this argument in the end insufficient? You know, could this come up in the future?
It certainly could. This is not the last we've heard of this argument. Originally, they brought up that they didn't think that not allowing gay people to marry was discrimination. That argument was laughed out of court, laughed out by the Board of Elections. So they came up with this new and, frankly, more creative argument that says that the terms of the council passing a law restricting referenda and initiative on Human Rights Act in 1978 was not the right, was not proper under the Charter of 1977. Now, they have brought this issue to the D.C. Board of Elections twice. D.C. Board of Elections has rejected it twice. They brought it to court, and the lower court has rejected it. But they have not yet had a chance to bring this particular argument to the D.C. Court of Appeals, and with the recent referendum, they just ran out of time. That is the argument that they are going to bring up to the D.C. Court of Appeals. Probably there will be a hearing sometime in May. That is their last hope and last chance of ever stopping marriage equality in the district.
Now, but what's wrong with the argument, Mark? I know it's been
rejected. Okay, what's wrong with the argument? And it does get pretty complex. It has to do with whether or not the D.C. Charter, which says that you can't have referendums based on appropriations, whether that is exclusive or whether or not the D.C. Council can add additional grounds upon which you cannot have a referendum.
I see.
The D.C. Charter says, and it's frankly, it's not even in the main section, it's in a definition section, where it says the definition of an initiative is anything other than appropriations that the voters vote on. Cleta Mitchell argues, based on that definition section, that only appropriations is banned by the charter, and the council can't ban other things. But as the court held, the council can and does ban other things, for example, things against the Constitution, things against home rule. There's all kinds of things that weren't mentioned in that definition section that we all know you can't have an initiative on. You couldn't have an initiative, for example, to ban free speech or to otherwise violate the Constitution. So implied rights are there, and if there can be implied rights, why can't the council add more? There's nothing in the charter that says these are exclusively the only things you can't vote on. So the question is whether or not the council could add more. The court said they could, and this will go up before the D.C. Court of Appeals. And I will be there fighting it, and also I plan to argue not just that the Human Rights Act is valid, but also this really is an appropriations bill, because what happens when D.C. couples get married is that they save on taxes. And you can't levy taxes on people. So even though the appropriations process is admittedly a minor point of the reason why gay people want to get married, they want to get married because they love each other and they want to build homes together and so forth, it does end up changing tax law and appropriations law, and as such, it is impermissible under the original charter burden. So I think that argument, plus the human rights argument, should be sufficient to win the day.
And just a little bit of station identification. You're listening to WRGW on GWRadio.com. This is News in Depth. We're talking to Mark Levine. He is legal counsel to the Gertrude Stein Democratic Club. He's really at the forefront of gay rights advocacy, talking about the most critical juncture in this whole thing, which came Wednesday, as same-sex couples in D.C. were finally allowed to apply for marriage licenses. If you want to jump in on the conversation at any point, you can give us a call. 202-994-WRGW is our number, 202-994-9749. Or if you prefer, shoot us an IM at RGW Radio. That is our screen name. And I know Ryan has a question about a move by Catholic Charities.
I do. Yeah. Obviously, a action such as this, which has created a lot of happiness in the district, but they're also, you know, your usual dissenters, the predictable crowd from, you know, Westboro was there. But also, Catholic Charities decided this week that they are going to end benefits for all spouses in their organization, as opposed to being forced to provide, or I guess being mandated to provide equal benefits to the spouses of homosexual couples in their organization. What is your take on this? It feels like a bit of a draconian, drastic move in response to the district's recent ruling.
Well, you know, you can either expand rights or contract rights. My concern with an employer is they provide equal rights to all, equal pay for equal work. One of the things the Catholic Charities is doing that I'm not even sure will stand up to law is they're saying for past employees will provide benefits for spouses, but not for new employees. That may or may not stand up in law. I guess you can change your policy and apply it differently to, frankly, two people doing the same amount of work. But at the end of the day, I do think it's fair for any organization to say we are going to give benefits to spouses or we are not going to give benefits to spouses. What's unfair is to say we're only going to give benefits to straight people,
right,
and not to gay people. And what's interesting about this is that Catholic Charities has long given benefits to people who violate Catholic doctrine. And the reason for that is because Catholic Charities is required by law not to discriminate on the basis of religion. That's because Catholic Charities gets public money and there is a separation between church and state. So, for example, if you've got a Jewish person or a Muslim person or an atheist person, they work for Catholic Charities, they can't discriminate against them. And even more interestingly, if you have a Catholic person who gets a secular divorce but doesn't get a Catholic divorce, that's extremely violative of Catholic doctrine, and yet they will pay spousal benefits to a person not even recognized by the Catholic Church as the lawful spouse. I mean, think about this. If somebody has a secular divorce, in other words, they go to the courts and get a divorce, and they don't have a divorce within the Catholic Church.
An annulment.
Right, exactly. They don't have an annulment. Then according to Catholic doctrine, they're still married to somebody else.
Sure.
And yet the Catholic Church was willing to throw their doctrine out the window and obey secular laws rules on marriage and divorce. And so it should be clear, Catholics are not doing this to protect their doctrine. I guarantee you the Catholic doctrine of divorce, which you can find throughout the New Testament, it's the reason why the Church of England began, is far more important to Catholic doctrine than denying benefits to gay people. The reason they did it, though, is clear, because lots of straight people have divorces, and it's easier to be bigoted against gay people than it is to be against straight people who are divorced.
Now, do you,
so
Mark?
I think it's inconsistent, and I do think that it's basically pure prejudice. I gave an option to, I wrote in the Washington Post an editorial. If the Catholic Church wants to treat everybody equally, all they have to do is allow all of their employees to designate one person they live with in their home to get benefits.
Right.
Right? It could be a spouse. It could be maybe an aged mother. Whoever it is, they could do that. And they could do that equally and treat everyone equally, and they wouldn't have to recognize gay couples as married. They didn't choose that option.
Could lawsuits stem from this? I would imagine it would be very difficult to sue the nonprofit charitable arm of the Catholic Church.
No, I think that the one lawsuit that could be filed is the one whereby they treat past employees different from current employees. It's sort of an equal pay for equal work kind of argument. In other words, what, I joined you a year ago and you pay for my spouse, but she joined you a week ago and you don't pay for her spouse and they do the same work. That, I think, is the grounds. I think the Catholic Charity should be consistent. They should deny benefits to all spouses, or grant them to all spouses, or grant every employee a person they can designate, rather than this sort of, we'll get people who were with us in the past, but not those in the future. That may have a legal problem.
Now, Mark, here's a story that broke just a couple of days ago. Virginia Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli sent a letter on Thursday to the Commonwealth's public colleges and universities urging them to rescind policies banning discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation. Address the legal argument, if you could, that Ken Cuccinelli seems to be applying, which is that these colleges are essentially out of line in creating policies independent of the legislature. And what about the moral implications of this?
It's a striking letter. What he's saying is, we want you to be bigots, and you're not being bigots, and how dare you not be bigoted when we want you to be. It's a very striking letter. I've never seen anyone say, you know, it would be like saying, we have no policy that bans black people, we have no policy that doesn't ban black people, so if you don't ban black people, you're wrong. It's this weird thing. I think colleges have every right to be more tolerant, more accepting, more equality-based than their government. Just because, Alabama had Jim Crow, even when Alabama had Jim Crow laws, you had plenty of institutions within Alabama that treated blacks and whites equally, and you didn't have the governor of Alabama saying, because we're prejudiced, we insist that you be prejudiced too. It's an extraordinary document. It's saying not only that we, the government, are specifically going to be bigoted against our fellow citizens, but we're insisting that that you have no right to be tolerant of others.
Now, Mark, I do have to ask, my question I had when I was reading the story was, while the Attorney General seems to be saying that they cannot have any sort of formal regulation, these are created independently of the legislature, created by the schools themselves,
right,
can't have these laws. Does that really change the school? Would that actually force them to change any specific behaviors or simply change doctrine?
Why would he do that if he didn't want them to discriminate? I mean, if he wants everyone to be treated equally, he would do what every other governor has done and leave them alone. What he's saying to schools, universities across Virginia is, kick out your gay students, kick out your gay professors, throw them to the curb. He's asking people to be bigots. And he's saying, that how dare you claim that you have no right to be tolerant. You have no right to be fair. You must mistreat your gay students, and if you don't, we're coming after you.
I mean, Mark,
I think it's an extraordinary view.
I mean, this almost sounds to me political. He looks at the atmosphere around him. He sees D.C. has just legalized same-sex marriage for the very first time in its history. Is this an appropriate avenue in his mind to come out and to make take a socially conservative stance, whether it takes effect or it doesn't?
You know, I suppose so. I mean, Governor Faubus in Arkansas thought it was a great idea to stand in the schoolhouse door and prevent black students from coming in. He thought it would help him politically, and I suppose it did. But the striking thing is not only that he wants to treat gay people as second-class citizens. The striking thing is that he's telling people, don't treat gay and straight citizens equally, and if you do, we're going to come after you. That, to me, reminds me of, I don't know, people in the South, they called white people, and I won't use the N-word, but N-word lovers, because, in other words, we're not just mad, we're not just discriminating ourselves, but we want to force you to discriminate, even if you don't want to. It's an extraordinary thing. It may be only for politics, but what I think it shows is that, you know, Virginia Republicans support bigotry, and he thinks that bigotry is something that's going to play into his political campaigns. I actually don't think even Virginia Republicans are as bigoted as Ken Cuccinelli. I think that even Virginia Republicans would say, if somebody doesn't want to discriminate, we're going to force them to discriminate. It's striking. It's amazing that he would do that right now in 2010.
Mark, just a couple of minutes left. Now that the nation's capital allows same-sex marriage, what does this mean for the rest of the country? Does it portend a broader trend towards acceptance in your mind?
I think that Massachusetts began in 2004. Then we have Iowa, Connecticut, Vermont, New Hampshire, minor setback in California, now D.C., Maryland's around the corner. I think New York is around the corner. New Jersey isn't far behind. Washington State. This is something that it's two steps forward, one step back. California and Maine would be the steps back. But it's something that's time is coming. All you have to do is look at the polls, and you can see that the overwhelming majority of people listening to my voice right now, people at George Washington University, young people across the country, support marriage equality, support human rights for gay people by 75-80% margins. People over 65 are against it, some 70-30. It's just like segregation. It's a matter of time. As, frankly, the older, more bigoted people die off and the younger people take over, by the time your generation is in their 40s and 50s, it will be in every state in the United States.
And I have to ask one last question for you. And it occurred to me when we were speaking earlier, you mentioned how D.C. first allowed the recognition of same-sex marriages made in other jurisdictions, and then now has obviously accepted its ability to do it itself.
Exactly.
Maryland is taking a similar path. Do you
exactly.
see this as maybe
a
more established path that other states could be taking towards the acceptance
Absolutely.
Of gay marriage?
And New York, I should also. People don't even realize that. People who are married in D.C. or Massachusetts, can New Yorkers can get married and be recognized in the state of New York. I absolutely think it's the right path to go, because once people see that gay couple being married does not affect straight people's lives one iota, it merely means that people you know or people you don't know are able to live more fulfilling lives, and it doesn't affect straight people one bit, and the sky doesn't cave in, and there are no massive hurricanes. Once people realize that, I think they shrug their shoulders and say, it's none of my business whether John and Joe want to get married. If they do, good for them.
And Mark, we're going to have to let you go because we're just about out of time. I said as I picked up the phone, because I didn't want to broadside you with it throughout the course of the interview, but I asked if you would ever take the take advantage of what happened on Wednesday and apply it to your own life, and you said you weren't ready.
One day.
All right. Well, listen, now the opportunity, it sounds like it is readily available for all who wish to partake here in the
exactly.
District of Columbia. Must feel good crossing the finish line. Great to talk to you again.
Appreciate it. And I talk about things other than marriage equality. I'll just give a quick plug to my website, MarkLevineRadio.com. I was just on O'Reilly and some other programs. And
I saw that, yeah. What's your repeat your website one more time.
MarkLevineRadio.com. MarkLevineRadio.com.
And it's The Inside Scoop.
It's The Inside Scoop is the name of my show. You can also find it at RadioInsideScoop.com. Same website.
Tune in. Great show. Mark, thanks so much for joining us. Have a great rest of your weekend, and we will talk to you soon.